Welcome to The Clean Truth, where we like to call bullshit on the status quo.
What's up? Welcome back to The Clean Truth. I'm Don. This could absolutely turn into a big shit show.
No.
We're live in the basement of Brian Teach's new house and his bar. This is a pretty cool setup, though.
Yeah, it's getting there. Slowly but surely.
We have Brian Teach from First Form, Jeremy Mullins from First Form, and then Nature Boy.
Scotty Too Hottie.
Usually behind the camera, so this is nice, but you know.
Well, we're doing it for the likes. We got to get more, get some more views.
I thought you were trying to even out the hair. That's what I thought.
We got a bunch of bald guys. One guy with hair.
I feel like we need bigger stools, though.
He's sitting on a taller one, I think.
Yeah, I'm on the taller one, 100%.
Well, every episode, we usually, I always like to start out and thank Brett Bauer from Rain Monster Energy. Brett ships us enough caffeine to kill a couple cows at our office per month, so... Thank you, Brett, and thanks for keeping us wired like spider monkeys. And then we always do a ball busting. I didn't really have a good one other than, you know, Sunday we're going to take Scott to a real baseball stadium.
Sorry, buddy. You will never enjoy a baseball game like you will on Sunday ever again.
I don't know about that.
He's been denying this the
whole time. It's where the champions play. Yeah, everywhere else is for the losers.
Like, so last year didn't count as a real season. So technically, Nationals are still reigning champions in my mind. Just saying.
Man. Well, we'll see. We'll see what Sunday brings.
Okay.
You'd be crying like a baby.
Next thing we always do, we always do a clean truth. And really all it is we just, you know, let people ask in questions about training, diet, nutrition, whatever. Somebody asked me who was taller, me or Teach?
Oh, it's definitely you, Don.
Mullins.
I mean, I'm taller than you.
Listen, you're lucky. Me and Don got a free pass. You got a pass to get out from underneath the bridge tonight. Listen, you're troll height.
I'm just going to bust all of our balls before this because, you know, we're sitting here and we're prepping for this. And he tells us to tap the mic, talking to one of us. And we're all three just sitting there.
Everybody's sitting there tapping all the mics.
Can you hear it? Can you hear it? Which one's which? You know.
Well, how tall are you?
I'm every bit of 5'8".
You are not 5'8".
Is that what's on the driver's license?
Every bit of it.
Well, you're taller than me then, because I'm 5'6".
I got you both beat.
Instagram poll said I had you beat.
You had 3-inch Hokas on. Like, you wear platform shoes.
Tomatoes, tomatoes.
You did a poll to see who was taller?
Somebody else did it.
Yeah, somebody else did it. It was third party.
Yeah.
But it was proven later to be disqualified due to platform shoes.
Interesting. Well, I did get a serious one. And if I remember how he asked it, he wanted my thoughts on social media influencers. I think if I recall how he was asking this, he was saying that, I'm trying to figure out how to word this so I don't offend people. I think he knew that I was sitting with you guys. And you guys have one of the best platforms on the planet and what you guys do with your social media and how you guys do it. And the guy that asked this question, we've joked around about people who don't have that kind of tutelage and have never been taught that, who abuse it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
They get a big head real quick. I don't really have an opinion on it. I've voiced this opinion a million times, so I'm going to defer to you guys and let you guys answer that question.
Well, I think for sure there are people that are genetically gifted when it comes to fitness and being in shape, and they have the ability to eat more freely and have tremendous results. Not taking anything away from how they work out, any of that. And I think that if you don't have experience getting people through the trenches that don't necessarily have that gifted gene, you probably shouldn't be offering a whole lot of advice, because it's going to take some experience to get somebody through that. And what doesn't affect somebody will affect somebody else. And if you don't know what that looks like when you run into that roadblock, you're going to get stuck real quick.
I was going in a different direction on that with social media. Like, I think people have to realize that people are showing their highlight reel, right? Like, that's 90% of what goes on in social media is they're showing the best products or the best angles. And people have to realize, like, that's not real life, right? You know, there's certain photos that, you know, people won't post because they look bad. And I think, you know, if we're talking about influencers, no matter, you know, if we're talking about fitness or we're talking about sports or bourbon, fill in the blank, right? Like, I think everyone needs to understand that a lot of that is someone's best photo or their best moments. That's not real life. And I think that's important to remember.
I heard a guy say something, I don't know, a week or so ago. I saw him post it, and it said, you never hear anybody say, I'm not an expert on that subject, so I'm not going to speak on it. I thought it was pretty good, which is kind of true.
I mean, for me, I had one, you know, this week. Someone come in and is wanting to do a bodybuilding show, and I'm straight up like, I can get you lean. I have no idea what categories or what the judges are looking for in a bodybuilding show. You need to go, you know, see someone else. And I sent him a couple of photos of guys I've worked with. And I was like, if you just want to be lean and get healthier, like, I can do this, but I can't do that stuff because that's not my lane. And I think that lacks a lot in social media. If we're talking about fitness coaches or influencers inside of, you know, the fitness, you know, space, or, you know, they don't show, you know, the bad days or the mistakes they make from a nutritional standpoint, or they hide whether they're drinking, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of that. I think that the end user just needs to realize, like, it's not real life. It is almost a production or a show in most cases.
Yeah. And I think until you are okay with admitting that you really don't know anything, you're really not ever going to learn anything. Like, you're going to be pretty well stuck in one area because you think you know everything, and it's okay not to know.
Yeah.
It's okay to have to figure some things out. And that doesn't mean that, like, Jeremy couldn't get that person in shape, but he might need to ask somebody like, hey, what do you do here? What do you do at 4 weeks out? What changes at 2 weeks out? You know, I'm not a big fan of peak week when we talk about bodybuilding shows, because I think it's a bunch of bullshit, but, you know, there's things that do progress through that process that if you're not used to working in that toolage, then you probably have to ask a little bit. But then once you do, like, it's not, you're not splitting the atom. It's not terribly difficult. It's just, you have to do it once or twice to have a pretty good idea what it looks like.
What about reverse dieting? You think that's bullshit too? Cause I'm going to reverse diet when we get done with this podcast.
How many days?
About 10 minutes. It'll be good to go.
What's your definition of reverse
diet? I think you would be better off like on a 3-day fast after what we just ate. You should just maybe not eat for a few days.
But I mean, I think, I mean, here's the reality of it. You know, I come from more of like a clinical performance, you know, background when it comes to nutrition. And I probably hadn't heard of reverse dieting and that terminology until I got more into, you know, with First Form and more of the, what I would call the bodybuilding community as an aspect, right? We always call it in a clinical setting, tapering down or titrating down calories and then titrating back up, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you put someone on a 2,400 calorie diet and you kept them on there for 4 weeks, and you dropped to 2,200 and then 2,000, well, you just go right back up how you came down, right? So I guess that, you know, in terms is a reverse diet. You know, but I'd never heard it termed that until probably the last, you know, 4 years.
Mm. I think, you know, I don't want to break anybody's heart here, but your metabolism is adaptable. You know, if you have been spending a great amount of time in a deficit, then your metabolism is going to slow down. Everything is going to get very, very efficient. And when we talk about burning calories, the one thing you don't want your body to be is efficient. You know, if I go back to the bodybuilding days, anytime I ate food, I would be sweating, because my body would just get so hot. My metabolism was absolutely moving as fast as it possibly could. Nothing about what I was doing was efficient at that time. And you can do, like, the normal person can do that. But unfortunately, we spend so much time in a calorie deficit, and then we splurge on the weekends and we way over consume food, and we create this yo-yo effect with the calories that it makes the metabolism not work for you. It's working 100% against you.
So we were talking about cheat meals before we came down here. So you're against a cheat meal.
Everything's protein, carbs, and fats, right?
I mean,
does it fit?
Well, except for what we're drinking.
Then there's bourbon.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that for somebody who is attempting to reverse diet or slowly work their calories back up, it's no different than dieting, right? You have to be pretty well disciplined on those numbers on a daily basis. And then based on your results, we slowly creep them up. And as we're creeping them up, we may not creep them up 1 week and we may lower your cardio. You know, we may start manipulate the number that way so that we can get you to a spot where, okay, now you're, you know, if we say that your basal metabolic rate is 10 calories, can we move beyond that? Can we get it to where now you're burning a lot more at a no load? And I think we can, but it has to be done properly.
I think he dodged the cheat meal question.
I think you did too.
Yeah, no, I said you got to stay consistent.
Oh, okay. I was going back to that. But I think, you know, that term, and it depends, right? If working with a lifestyle client, you know, that doesn't have an event, doesn't have a show, doesn't have maybe, you know, a cruise they're going on, they want to look a certain way. If they're just wanting to get healthier over time, like I try not to teach that as a cheat meal, but as teach it as, hey, life happens. You know, if it's going to be your 9-year-old, you know, girl's birthday, like have a cupcake with her, right? And it's just some additional carbs and fats. You move on about the day. So that's the cheat, I think, becomes where the cheat happens and it's not planned. And then it just becomes a vicious cycle mentally, right? Because they're failing in the sense that it's okay to have a cheat once a week, but then they're failing because they're having it on Tuesday night versus the planned Friday night. Mm-hmm. And that's where it becomes like just a real, like, I think a negative mental space for most people.
Yeah. And then it turns into like, well, I overate on Saturday, so I'm going to undereat on Sunday and do a whole bunch of cardio to make up for what I ate on Saturday. And it just turns into the same thing. Like Mullins is saying, we're not moving in a positive direction. We didn't learn anything. Yeah. We made it okay to F up and we're going to try to clean it up the next few days and then do it again.
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah.
I've done it a million times.
Now mentally, I think there's some, you know, like giving someone a break or, you know, having a cheat meal or something that's normally not in the diet plan. Like you want dessert or you want pizza versus what you normally have. I think that's good for a mental break.
Sure.
But I've never seen it physically be a positive benefit.
Yeah.
You know, to increase metabolism just by doing one cheat meal.
And if you're trying to reverse diet, if we really are trying to, I call it metabolic threshold, are we really trying to move those calories to a spot where, okay, we keep moving calories up, but we're not gaining any body fat and we're able to put on more lean muscle tissue. We're going to keep doing that until we reach a spot where, okay, now we're putting on fat. Now we got to change something back again, right? And usually that ends up being plus 10, plus 20% calories than what they were eating before. And we're able to move from that. But if that's the end goal, then you got to get there. And then we can talk about taking the reins off a little bit and, you know, letting you have some freedom for a period of time.
Scott, you see what happened here? I made a joke about having to take a shit.
Yeah, I know.
And these two went down a wormhole.
Your question went out the window. It took
me like 10 yeah. minutes to get out of it. But it was good info, so that was cool.
It's good.
Well, before we get into some cool shit, when you were talking, I was thinking about something. So what I did when I quit competing was, I think I did one off-season diet. And by what I mean by off-season diet, I was just eating a shit ton of food. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of decided, you know what, I need to step away from this. It was right when we were ramping up our business. And there was no way mentally that I was going to be able to compete as a bodybuilder anymore. I just knew it. And I was coming to terms with it, and it was cool. So ever since then, I mean, in all seriousness, I haven't dieted since. Like legitimately said, okay, this is the meal plan I'm following for 12 weeks. I've started a million of them, and I'll get 7-8 weeks into it, and I'm like, I'm good. I just haven't had that mindset nor the will to want to fucking do it anymore. But I think I've learned so much by doing what I did in that sport that
I'll fuck off on the weekends and I'll eat whatever the hell I want. That's just the way it is. But during the week, I'm pretty disciplined where I don't eat like an asshole. And I've been able to maintain a reasonable physique for the last 5 or 6 years to where my body will sit between, I don't know, 205 to 212, something right around in there. And it never gets out of that range. And my body fat stays within a certain range for, I've just been able to maintain that. So what do you think, like, do you think it would be easier for somebody to just kind of step away? Somebody that had a little bit of discipline. I know.
What you just identified there is the perfect scenario for being able to intuitively eat. You know, unfortunately, that's become like the new key word that we hear over and over again, that people want to intuitively eat. Unfortunately, they've never spent enough time eating the proper way to have built the habits so that they can intuitively eat. They're 20, 40, 60, 100 pounds overweight, and they just want to eat. That's their way of saying, well, I'm following a diet, I'm intuitively eating, but they're not getting anywhere. You know, along with that, you know, your years of bodybuilding has put on enough muscle mass that, and has kept your muscle, you still work out. So that muscle is very active still in burning calories. So you have some ability, you have gained yourself freedom. You've put money in the bank, it's gained interest, and it's still paying you because of your bodybuilding days. And unfortunately for the person, the layperson who is new to fitness or has just tried to, you know, turn over a new leaf, they're not afforded those benefits until they put the time in.
I was just thinking 5'5", 205. That's, you know, it's pretty compact.
I like the sound of that. I'm 1 inch off. No, probably 3 pounds away from it.
I think, you know, that is the lifestyle that most people go to, right? If they're not, you know, trying to get super lean, like, you know, you just want to be healthy and lift and be in shape, but enjoy stuff on the weekends. I think that's the point we're trying to get everybody to, mm-hmm. right? And but until you track it and you know what to do 85-90% of the time, and you're not trying to drop 60-80 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a big one too, is a lot of people, you know, hey, they go back to the cheat meal question. They want to be off on the weekend or they want to have a cheat meal, et cetera. And they've still got a long way to go in their journey. Right. Yeah. You know, there's a difference in dropping 10 pounds so that you're really lean versus being semi-lean, you know, just a 10 pound difference than being 60, 80 pounds overweight.
Yeah. I think the blessing that you get as from trying to be a bodybuilder is that you, for whatever period of time you attempted that, you made protein a priority and you become very accustomed to consuming protein. Anytime you sit down and eat something, protein is involved in whatever it is you're eating. And you're usually looking at that number first. And for a lot of regular people that weren't bodybuilders or didn't have a fitness type goal, unfortunately, that protein is like thrown out the window. It's the first thing that even now, you know, I'm 10 years removed from being a bodybuilder. If I don't pay attention to my protein, it's the first thing to go down, you know, and I have to track the protein. Now I'm pretty lucky in the fact that I can eat kind of like you said, Don, all these other things. But if I don't hit that protein number, then other bad things start to happen, right? I start to lose some muscle mass. Muscle's not as active as it was. I don't recover as well as I used to. And you start sliding the wrong way.
Well, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, that I can just eat whatever the hell I want and I'm good and I don't give a shit either. You know what I mean? I have days where, you know, I mean, like tonight, I just housed damn near half a pizza upstairs before we came down
here. It was more than half, sir.
You think it was more than half?
Yeah, it was more than half.
Well, he had to get this 3 serving of fruit in. So in order to equal, you know, that cup and a half.
Tomatoes, fruit.
Well, there's some pineapple on his.
Well, Rose made.
What about the snacks?
I was getting ready to say that.
Those are calorie free, right?
Rose made a snack tray about half the length of this bar.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of salami on it. So that's protein.
Yeah. Welcome to my struggles now.
But no, I mean, in all seriousness, those people struggle too. I struggle. Like, it kicks my ass. And sometimes I get a little down on, I'm like, man, I've been eating like an asshole for the last 2 or 3 weeks. And then, I don't know, for whatever reason, I can just flip a switch on in my head and say, okay, well, I'm done fucking around for a month or so. And I'll get really strict for a month or so. And then I'll just turn it right back off.
But that's because you've done it, right? And I would say I'm the same way. Like, man, it's real easy for me to get 20 pounds heavier and not a good 20 pounds heavier. Right. It's a 20 pounds of fluff. And, you know, I think that because you can revert back, and, you know, there's one thing about doing a bodybuilding show that is very, very good, is that at the end of this process, however many weeks it is, 16, 12, whatever you're doing, you're getting on stage in your underwear in front of a crowd of people, and having that deadline is very motivating. It keeps you away from cheating and effing off on a diet.
Well, and I think this is part of the learning process for anybody that needs to diet, needs to lose weight, or does a lifestyle change, right? We always talk about it as, you know, minimizing the rebound. And we can look at all of our history. You know, the first time you diet, you might have got super lean. And then you go, you know, you didn't reverse diet. You just went back to your
lifestyle.
Shit,
that was the only reason I did a bodybuilding show, is because I wanted to, like, guys were like, the old guys, the old heads at the gym were like, oh, yeah, well, you do one. And then afterwards, you can put on all this weight. Yeah. I'm like, I'm in. I'm 144 pounds on stage, look like a wet noodle.
So whether it's bodybuilding, whether it's just weight loss, I think, you know, the key is to minimizing the rebound. And what that means is, okay, when you're on and then you happen to fall off, whether that falling off is one meal, when that falling off is in a weekend, or whether that's a week, is minimizing the time that you're off. And I think that's where people will have long-term success, is being able to minimize that. No matter if we're talking about bodybuilding, weight loss, any health journey, is, you know, learning to do the right thing more often. Because we're all going to fall off, period.
True.
Except for some of those Instagram ones, then they never fall off, right?
Yeah. Based on Instagram.
Based on Instagram, they're never, you know, never struggling, never falling off.
True story, the first show I ever did in 2009, when Brett was helping me. I never told him I did this, by the way, so if he listens to this, he'll probably shoot himself.
What show did you do in 2009?
It was the first year after they canceled the Caveman. Oh, so okay. It was the first Midwest
got it
show in downtown at the theater there. But after the show, I gained over 40 pounds in 4 days.
Yep.
My ankle swelled so bad, I got really sick. Oh, yeah. And I never told Brett I did that.
Yeah.
He would have shit himself. But
what was the calorie consumption on those?
I don't even know.
Yeah.
So I mean, I was the water, housing everything, man.
Water and the sodium is what really gets you in that post show. Your body is a giant sponge.
Mm-hmm.
Giant sponge.
Well, I had no intentions of going down that wormhole, but that was some education.
Oh, there we go. Bodybuilding.
So,
Badoop bing.
I wanted to talk about bourbon. You guys are bourbon connoisseurs.
I don't know. Connoisseurs.
Or really. Collectors. Or,
okay, maybe collector. I'll take that.
I can't.
Connoisseurs know what they're talking about.
Yeah. I can't get into this shit. I can't get into the mystique of chasing down bourbon bottles. I'll drink the shit out of it. I love it. But I wouldn't be able to tell you if you put that. This is the first time I've ever had Blanton's, by the way. But if you
you're
put
welcome.
That, thank you. It's awesome. But if you put that bottle of Blanton's in front of me, or one of these bottles of Jefferson, or the other one, I wouldn't be able to tell you which one is like an expensive one versus a cheap bottle.
And now Jeremy's going to pour another glass, because I mean, this is one of those guys that you don't want around your good in quotation marks, your expensive bourbon. I agree with you, though. I'm not necessarily a chaser. I think my bottles of Blanton, thankfully, have all been gifts. I haven't really ever tried to track a bottle down. From what I understand, they're pretty hard to get a hold of. So,
what defines an expensive bottle of bourbon?
Well, I think a lot of it's supply and demand to it.
The price tag.
Yeah. I think a lot of it comes, you know, because I mean, here's the reality of Blanton's. You go back 5-6 years ago, you're picking the bottle up for $65, and it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes, you know, supply and demand. And now, you know, it's allotted and people are picking it up and selling it second market, you know, more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last bottle I found was actually, you know, near Lexington, and found it, you know, in a liquor store. You know, and the cost was only $95. So it just depends on, you know, where you're getting. But you go online, you're paying $135 for a bottle.
Yeah, I would say it's definitely based on supply and demand, because, I mean, we can look, there's a bottle of Basil Hayden over there. There's a bottle, I think, upstairs of one that Jeremy and I found called Old Monroe. That's from, and it's not bourbon, I think it's just whiskey, but it's from right over in Illinois. And both of those bottles are like $30 to $40 and they're fantastic.
Yeah.
Like there's awesome. Absolutely nothing wrong with them. And they're very, very enjoyable by somebody who is not a connoisseur or a collector.
I know absolutely nothing about any of this. All I know is that's a cool looking bottle. So
do you like it though? You're drinking
it. It's good. Yeah. All right. It's really good. Strong.
I have a hard time finding like tasting differences.
Yeah.
Like you could pour that in a glass and a bottle.
Yeah, like I can't do the, you know, to tell you that there's a note of vanilla or caramel.
Right.
What we have found in our experience of
lots of drinking.
I mean,
I don't know if I want to hear the rest.
No.
So back before I made the move, you know, out here, I would come out for, you know, our end of the year awards and all that, and you know, we may or may not have always snuck in a bottle of bourbon between us, and usually we were pretty good about giving others a little bit of it, but there was one that we didn't share. But what I found, and you know, I guess both of us, because we agree on it, we like the same one, is actually getting somewhere between 80 and 90 proof, because that I feel like is a good drinking you know bourbon. And when it starts getting higher, you know, 95, 100 proof, or even, you know, the
even higher than that, right? Higher. Like the cast strength stuff, clears, man, it just gets, it's just a little hot, you know, and I found out that I just don't really like the hot stuff.
Yeah. It's just not enjoyable to drink. So that's one thing I found, if someone's just getting into drinking bourbon, is, you know, and you want something that's smooth and drinkable, you know, just stick with the 80, 90 proof. And that's where I found a lot of the ones that I like. You know, Evans Williams has a 2013 right now out. It's $29 a bottle. And it's my favorite, like, drinking one right now.
Buffalo Trace or Woodford.
Yeah.
It's probably my two favorites. I don't know why. It's just maybe that's because I probably only drink about 8 or 9 flavors.
Yeah.
Do you know who owns Blanton's?
I have no idea.
Buffalo Trace.
See? There you go.
Learn something new every day.
Isn't Buffalo Trace owned by another company, though?
I'm sure there's like multiple LLCs and goes down the list, but it's the same facility. It's pretty cool. You can tour, you know, for those that you know, maybe live close to, you know, Frankfurt or Lexington area, like you can go in and tour their facilities, and they'll have, they've done it now where it's, for example, you don't have Blanton's for sale every day. It may be a Buffalo Trace one day that you can pick up, and you can pick up one bottle. They do allotment there. So that's a way that people can come in. It just depends on what they're doing that day.
What's Woodford? What proof?
I don't know. There's a bottle right over there. We can look.
90, I think it's 90 something.
Yeah, I don't think, it's not super hot. Mullins, I can't tell that you stood up.
He gained 6 inches of height. I don't know. That's just probably that's my go-to is Woodford or Buffalo Trace.
Isn't Buffalo Trace older than America?
Oh, I don't know.
I think they started making liquor before America was even a
Buffalo country. Trace?
Yeah. Pretty sure.
90 proof.
Yeah. Falls right in the sweet spot.
So what's the difference between single barrel and double barrel?
Once again, not a connoisseur.
Man, I thought you guys were like experts on this shit. That's why I want to talk about it.
I guess it means it had two
barrels. I wanted to learn something
because it was in two barrels. I don't know.
I can tell you the you know.
I'll tell you if it's good or not. Let's open it up.
There's a couple that, you know, we've liked. Like the Jeffersons makes a, they have a Jefferson Ocean and what's the Cabernet?
Cabernet cask.
So they take, you know, the bourbon, they put it in old Cabernet wine to let it age in that.
There's probably 3 bottles of that around the house here. That's how much, like
it has almost,
we enjoy it.
Yeah, it's like a little bit of a sweet taste at the end. And then the Ocean one, supposed to go into barrels and then go out to seas, so that the bourbon is not just sitting in one place. It's actually moving around inside the barrel, so more of the liquid comes in contact with the barrel.
Huh. There you go.
And it tastes good.
Okay. Who goes and gets them?
Who goes
and gets them? I'm stumped on this,
Who goes and gets what?
If you throw the barrels out to sea,
who goes and gets them? Oh, I mean, it's on a boat.
It's on a ship. My bad. Should explain that a little better. Yeah, you put the barrels on the ship.
I got this image of you just thing? Tossing barrels.
Just toss it in.
Well, that's a waste. Like the fucking boss.
Listen, Jeremy. Tap the mic.
Well, that was my bourbon lesson for the day. I don't know
if that was a lesson, but I mean, I'm glad we talked about it.
It was something, for sure.
There's probably some people right now going, man, these guys are idiots.
Dumbass. I was seriously ready for you guys to like smooth sail through that.
Yeah. We're not the connoisseurs. No, it's like we're consumers.
We're consumers.
Connoisseurs. They're smooth through the nutrition, and then the alcohol is a little wavy.
Maybe we should have covered tequila.
Yeah. Huh? I mean, listen, I like some tequila.
I do too. I love it. I would almost rather drink tequila than bourbon. But
aha.
Really?
I like that. Mullins, no. Take a lesson.
No.
And I've gotten a little bougie with it. I mean, I won't drink cheap tequila anymore.
Yeah. Well, we can't.
I just can't do it.
I mean, you don't really drink cheap whiskey either, right? Like cheap whiskey will do the same thing to you.
Like Jack Daniels, Jim Beam, shit like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's some cheap ones. There's no doubt about that. Some real cheap ones. You'll pay for the hard way.
I'm an IPA guy, so I feel like I can't contribute.
Man.
I know.
I really like IPAs. They just really don't like me. It's instant stuffy nose and
I can't get into the craft belly. Beer thing. It just wasn't. No.
I love the craft beer. I love the taste of craft beer. I think that's why. So
you don't like the bubbles, Don.
No, I just grew up an hour away in the cornfields and we drank, you know, Pabst Blue Ribbon and Stag on the weekends. You know what I mean? Now these pussies are drinking cornhole blueberry wheat rye.
Say it louder.
Like, you know, we had a saying when I'm going to date myself, but 20 years ago, when kids were getting out of high school is when they started playing with all these toys to smoke their weed. And we're like, you're fucking playing with it. Just roll it up and smoke that shit and move on. And that's what I feel like is happening with the craft beer. You're trying to figure out 18 fucking names for a beer. Grab a Budweiser, crack that fucking thing open and drink it and move on.
I'm now definitely, like, definitely a fan of Pilsners and Lagers, but the IPAs or any of the pale ales, just...
Those hops.
They kill me. Oof. It's the yeast. No. It's not the hops. It's the different type of yeast.
So I'm with Don on that. Like, I'm just a classic beer, like...
Yeah. Give me a course. You're from West Virginia. Yeah, right? So, I mean, I don't know what they drink up there, whether it's Michelob Light or.
It was Miller Lite was the big college beer.
Man, you guys are fancy. Miller Lite.
Well, that was.
We couldn't afford that.
Natty Light was.
That's there you
yeah.
go.
Yeah.
Natty Light, which
on the East Coast, I couldn't afford that. It was expensive. I had to drink Milwaukee's Best Light.
In the gold cans?
No, they were white or whatever, silver. White, whatever.
I remember when Bud Select came out. That was like, you were cool if you drank Bud Select. I think that was the only light beer that I would drink.
55 calories.
There was, do you remember the Bud Ice?
Oh,
when
yeah.
it first came out, had the penguin on it.
And it had
That's
more,
really dating had yourself.
More alcohol.
There's a lot. Yes. Oh, yeah. It was 5.9. I want to say it's 5.9.
It was higher for sure.
White bottles. Yeah. No, that was the beer of choice before college.
Well, let's pick a topic that you guys know something about.
Oh, man.
Well, no, I think...
Listen, we're old enough that I'm okay saying I don't know shit about anything.
I think we go back to bourbon. If people want choices, I would encourage any of the Jeffersons bourbon. And not just plain Jefferson, but their what I would call their individual ones. Either the Ocean or Cabernet. The rum one were... Yeah. Iffy on it. It was
the Twin Oak. I don't necessarily love either. Although Don had some last night.
Yeah,
he had more than some. He tended to like it.
Blanton's.
I had quite a bit.
Five glasses.
Blanton's is good. If you can ever get your hand on, they have a gold label Blanton's. It's probably the best bottle I've ever had. I was gifted a bottle from a lieutenant colonel in Kentucky, and it was very very smooth. May have drank all the bottle.
Thanks for sharing, Mullins.
Yeah.
My bad.
I turned you on to the green bottle.
I did get a green bottle.
Okay.
Which is the...
it's Japan or China?
European, right?
I don't know. Yeah. See?
It's not as hot. It's only 40... It's only 80 proof.
Yeah.
40% alcohol. So if you're somebody who really doesn't like it hot...
Yeah.
right up your alley.
Are you still active duty?
Guard.
Guard. Do you do a lot of shooting?
Yes, when I have time. We grew up shooting skeet in West Virginia.
Off the mountains?
Like, you know, in the valley. Everything was mountains. That's what, you know, the cool thing about where I grew up was literally, it was in the, like, our house is on, you know, the side of the road, which is on the mountain. And then you have the road, and then you have a small creek, a small little what we call bottom, and then it's another mountain. You know, so if someone was a really, really good baseball player, you could throw a baseball from one side of the house to the house on the other side and probably hit the mountain. Like, that's how close the valleys are there.
How straight up and down the mountains are.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
I didn't know any different for a while.
Now, like, the only bad thing is that in order to get that baseball back, if he couldn't throw it back to you, it'd take you probably 45 minutes or an hour to drive all the way, because you had to go all the way down the damn mountain and then wave over to the other one.
I'm going to get my fill of that in November when I go on this elk hunt in Southwest Idaho. We're going 9,000 feet of total elevation. And I think the first 2 days is... It's 3,000 feet within a mile.
Nice.
So in perspective, that's straight up.
You'll be all right.
Left foot, right foot.
Yeah.
Walk fast.
She could be faster than the other guy. That's it.
No, I just want to talk about guns for a minute. I've kind of fallen in love with long-range shooting. I just can't get enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think about it all the time now. I think that kind of took the place of bodybuilding for me.
Stress reliever?
Yeah. No, just the, well, that too. But the challenge behind it, I don't think a lot of people understand what goes into that. There's a whole lot of things that happen.
Of things that happen.
Well, I think you got to, you know, when you say long range, like, define what's long range.
Anything over 400 meters. Is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. And 400 meters being, you know, a quarter of a mile.
And I'm by no means not an expert in the subject, but I think that's what's intriguing me about it so much, is it's a challenge. And I haven't been challenged like this since bodybuilding.
Let's talk about that half Ironman you're getting ready for, Don.
Have we committed?
I told you I would do it if you got the okay.
Rob's going to listen to this and he's going to go, that motherfucker, he told me he was doing it. I did put my foot in my mouth and say that I was going to do this. The only reason that I am debating on not doing that particular one. Oh,
and Jeremy is talking right out of this. This would be perfect. Go ahead.
Keep going.
So I am leaving on October 25th to go to Idaho for this elk hunt. This race happens to be 2.5 weeks before that.
It's 2.5 weeks.
Oh, man. He thought he was going to get the out.
I thought it was like the weekend before.
Have you seen me run?
Hey, listen, I can teach you the secret.
Oh, boy.
I don't know. We were scooting pretty good yesterday.
That's the problem. You got to slow it down.
You got to do the Mullins trot.
You got to do the Mullins trot.
Basically, walking with a little bit more arm action.
And they think you're running.
I mean, okay, I'm intrigued because that's what I used to do. I used to call it the Fat Man Shuffle.
Hey.
Oh, well, I mean, that's a new name for it.
Pretty close. I mean, here's the reality of it. If you are pretty good on a bike, like, you can swim and bike and be able to walk the marathon in an Ironman and finish.
This is just a half.
This is just a half.
He said a whole Ironman.
Hmm.
Salt water, wetsuit.
Easy peasy.
It is pretty much in my front yard. Like, I don't even have to move my car to do this. I can walk out my door and do it and then come back.
But, well, then you couldn't do it any time then. You know, you wouldn't have to do it.
Sounds like you're talking yourself into it.
No, I want to do it. I'm not talking myself out of doing it. What I don't want to happen is for me to be a beat-up bag of shit and then have to go hike a 60-pound sack into the mountains hunting for 10 days.
Wait, have you committed to one yet?
No, I haven't. You said this is October?
Mm-hmm. Why don't we do it next October?
A full?
It's a half in Wilmington, I think.
Oh. The beach to battleship?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure. I was trying to do one sooner.
Just trying to give you some time to train.
I mean, I signed up for a sprint. The only I can't do that because I didn't realize at the time that it was on the same weekend as our national convention for the franchise company. Literally same day. Can't do that. Then there's another race a couple weeks later, and about an hour north of us. But I don't know. It's just kind of in a weird area. Nobody's going to go up there. I'd be going up there by myself. I might drag Scott up there to film it. But what fun is that going to be?
Might be sick that week. I don't know.
I mean, he'll have fun.
Yeah.
That's a full or half?
The other race?
Yeah.
That's just a sprint.
Oh.
And it's not even as long of a sprint as the one that I signed up to do. The swim is half the distance. I think the bike
I'm sure we can find a half here.
In the summertime?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do, a half or a sprint?
I mean, I think doing a half would be cool. I've never done one. I've only done one sprint.
I think, you know, the half is actually harder if you're worried about your time than a full, or they have been for me. Because in a half, I feel like I can race that and I go harder. Versus in a full distance, I'm just like, I've got to finish this, so I'm going to take my time. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So as far as like hurting or being out of breath or pushing it, I think the half is actually harder than the full.
Well, why don't we just do one? You guys like to have a Halloween party. Why don't we just do our own little half Ironman around Halloween?
I'll be gone. I'll be in the mountains.
You'll still be there? You're missing the Halloween party?
Yep, I can leave on the 25th and come back the 12th.
You're an asshole.
Crazy. This is news to me. I'm gonna find a new place for Halloween.
What does it do when you get back then?
It might be a little cold down
there. Oh, jeez. You got lots
There's a lot of excuses.
Man.
I'm down to do one this summer. You find one, I'll go do it.
We can just go do it. We'll have to find one.
Let me do it.
Stick a Vine in a kayak and... In case one of us drown.
No, they got guys. There's a couple guys that are being in water with it.
I mean, if we did it solo, like just you and I, drag Jeremy out there.
Are you doing one?
Doing a full in November. So I'll do a half in whenever we want to do a half. I need to get some time in.
He's like, all right, yeah.
I'm doing a full.
Yeah, he's like, I'm doing a full. It's fine. Yeah, yeah, it's not big deal.
You catch that?
Yeah, I'll warm up with
it. It's not big deal.
Yeah.
But I'm no means fast triathlon or triathlon, triathlete, whatever the terminology would be.
I think that comes down to more like a consumer, the conversation we had earlier. I don't know if you can, you're a participant.
What's that?
I'm a participant in
not an athlete.
I'm not an athlete.
He's a triathlon participant.
Participant.
Well, would that
connoisseur that was, or kind of yes.
or consumer? Are you an athlete?
We're consumers.
Yeah.
Are you an athlete or are you a participant?
He's participant.
That would make me a registrar. Are you going to come down and do it?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Huh?
I mean, saltwater, wetsuit. I mean, that sounds like I may as well have.
I don't think
I may as well be on an inner tube.
Don't.
I don't own a wetsuit.
Do they do the swim? They don't do for the beach to battleship. They do the swim
in the channel.
In the channel, not in the ocean, right?
Mm-mm.
Still saltwater, babe.
I've never swam with a wetsuit on.
It's glorious.
You
don't have to kick your legs, really. You just use your arms.
I just got introduced to a swim buoy. You ever wear one of those things? Little thing that goes behind you? That's like the cat's meow.
I don't know what that is.
Behind you?
You know? So like when we swim in the channel, you don't want a boat to hit you, obviously, and go through there. So you can buy these little swim buoys. It's a belt. It's got a belt. It's like bright yellow or neon orange so boats can see it, and it floats on the water behind you.
Oh.
But it's also like, you know, if you absolutely have to stop, you can grab this thing and you can float on it. It's kind of, I don't know. For me, it's peace of mind. I like knowing it's back there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can get swimsuit. You can get full arm. You can get Farmer's John, or you can even get just the shorts. You know, so you don't have to go like a full, you know, swimsuit the entire time.
I've only been in a tri-suit one time, and it wasn't a pretty picture.
Oh, man.
Sal was trying to be, I think Sal was trying to be a smartass.
10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound can?
Yep. I ask your mom, she's probably got a picture of it somewhere. But I think it was the first form tri-suits that Sal ever had. It was the blue and orange ones or whatever. He sent me one, and I wore it. Didn't look too good. I think I was 225 pounds.
Yeah, I don't know that any of us look real good in them.
I mean, that's like eating tacos and you know what? There's no way to do that and look cool at the same time. I don't know how to wear one of those and look cool.
It's a different, like, that culture's different, which is cool. Like, I mean, all subcultures are different, but, you know, your triathlon, you know, just for example, like, even cycling clothing, I feel like, is made smaller.
Right.
Right? Like, you get a true, you know, XL in a cycling jersey, and it's still, like...
Listen, Mullins, we came from the bodybuilding world. You ain't got to talk about how different shit is.
I've seen some shit that can't be unseen.
That's right. You walk around the Arnold and be like, woof, all right, I know where I'm at.
Yeah. Full disclosure, a couple weeks ago, I went to go get on my bike. I have no idea how this happened, by the way, but it was pretty fun. My wife laughed. Yvonne laughed at me so fucking hard. Get out of my driveway, and for whatever reason, the gear shift on the back of my bike had gotten bent, and it threw my chain, and I fell so hard, I sheared that fucker right off the back of my bike. Tire came off, the whole nine yards. I couldn't get unclipped before I fell over.
Oh, man.
So I fell over. Some guy's standing there, and you could tell he was fighting back laughing until I stood up. And then when I stood up and looked at him, he was like, are you okay? He was like, I'm gonna laugh at this motherfucker. And then I stood up and he saw me and he's like, I'm not gonna laugh at him. Cost me $150 to get that fixed.
I've had some pretty good little falls on my bike.
I think most everyone who starts riding with clip-ins fall over.
Yeah.
I did the very first time I got on.
Yeah, and most times you just forget. Right, you come to a stop, or you know, and you forget you're clipped in.
Oh, I never forget now.
And now,
I promise you that
you're sitting there just teetering, and then it's you know, it's crashed over.
Definitely have a hard time getting clipped back in. I think that's where I struggle to find that pedal again.
Really? I think
it's lack of doing it,
right? Because if you ride, it just becomes
you
know, second nature to clip in and clip out.
Yeah, you see those like this real serious guys, like they leave their shoes clipped in on the bike as they get out of the. I mean, and they're tying them or whatever, putting them on as they're riding. Like, nah, I'm not that serious.
No,
I'm going to have a sandwich.
Yeah,
I'm going to drink a whole Gatorade.
I'm going to eat some gummy bears. Clothes. Right.
I'm going to dry off a little bit.
Me, I'm going to stretch out. I'm going to roll around. Do a little yoga first.
No.
Man, you would have done pretty good if your transition time wasn't 15 minutes. Oh, it was 15 minutes? Huh. Last time it was 18.
I did get...
I was going to say, like, I've done that before. We had... we did one in Claremont, Florida. It was when we went to Wilmington to do the full, the last year they had it. And that was when all the flooding had came. And they basically... They didn't cancel the event, but when we got there, they were like, oh, you're only riding 56 miles or whatever it is. Like, you run the full distance, but you're only going to ride 56 miles, right? Which we were fine with, but we had a buddy that was doing it for his 50th birthday. And then I'm sitting there with my other friend who's done an Ironman a couple of nights before. We've all decided, well, we'll just do this one. Not a big deal. So we look over and we're just like, you know, his name's Porter. And we're like, Porter, just so you know, you're not going to be an Ironman after this, but we will still be an Ironman.
Oh.
Needless to say, the next morning we packed up, drove to Claremont, Florida from Wilmington, North Carolina, found another event on the same weekend and did the
race. That you could register for?
Yeah, so it was a non-Ironman event. So it was just a local event. So it was still, they had registration, you know, available. And, but I remember having a 10-minute transition between the bike and the run and eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich.
That sounds all right.
Yeah, like changing out of the biking gear, putting on some running gear, eating a sandwich, and then heading out.
I'm in on that.
I think where I fucked up the last time I did it was when I was coming off the bike to do the run and they were handing out water, you know, as you're running through the little thing. Well, man, I just stopped and just chugged one because I was thirsty. Yeah.
Stopping's bad.
I think I belched the first mile of that run and I'm like, that wasn't such a smart idea. I shouldn't have chugged all that water.
No.
Usually stopping is not wise. Not a good idea.
No.
You should just.
Well, I didn't like legitimately moving. Like just stop and stand there. Gotcha. But I mean, I like slowed way down so I could just. I was thirsty.
Beer. Beer's good for you too. I think I had.
What?
Yeah. Did that at Chattanooga. Some guy had a beer. He's like, "You want a beer?" And I'm like, "I'm sure I do." You gotta have fun with these. Huh.
In the middle of a transition or in the middle of.
Oh, it was 1.5 miles.
1.5 miles in.
1.5 miles in on the run. Guy offered me a beer. I was like, "I'll take a beer."
Were you running and drinking this beer?
I mean.
Or was it like.
Let's go back to the Mullins Trot again, right? Like. You could still drink that beer on the Mullins Trot. You just got to slow down a little bit. The arm motion. Legs are about the same.
Mullins Trot somewhere between a 10:30 and 11:30.
I'm picturing this Mullins Trot as me having to take a serious shit and I can't keep it anymore.
That's pretty much
and
it.
I'm like,
that's pretty close.
And I'm like doing
that's
this.
Pretty much it.
Yeah. A little bit of more arm movement, but I mean, that was close. It was close. But back to your question. Yeah, you should do half.
Okay.
You have fun.
Let's do it.
I mean, it's only health, right?
I mean, what's worse?
The worst that's going to happen is I'll get in the mountains at 8,000 feet and die.
No.
We're not going guided. Did I say that?
Yeah.
We won't have guides.
Fine. That'd be okay.
All right.
Just buy a sat phone.
Buy a sat phone?
Yeah.
All right. I do want one of these though. Which watch is that?
The Garmin?
Yeah.
I think that's a Fenix 5.
That's what I have.
Yeah, there's a 6 model out now, I think.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, so they have a Fenix 6 model out.
I've been wanting to get one of those before I go on that trip.
Mine's way cooler than his, but yeah.
My wife got even one that's more cooler.
I mean,
it wasn't cool to the bank statement, but it's a cool watch.
They make them now with, I mean, everything but a hole in it about that big around. And I'm sure if you paid them enough, they'd put one in it.
Oh, yeah.
She can download, and we may be able to do this
music
to ours. Not like actually the race courses.
Oh, the course.
Yeah. That'll tell it like, because she got off track in her last trail run race. And it's like.
Don needs that.
Wrong. Yeah.
He's going on a non-guided hike.
So he could put in the coordinates and it would tell him which way to go.
Serious. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, you should do that. You should buy one of
those. Asshole.
Pour him another glass.
Yeah. But oh, it's pretty cool because it saved her from going off, you know, because she does ultra runs and is a true runner, unlike the Mullins Trot. Like, hers is a little bit faster.
Well, she's a real athlete.
Correct. She's a Hall of Famer.
She's not a participant. Listen,
I married well, okay? Gave my kids a chance. Hall of Famer. She's 6 foot tall.
Yeah, okay. Foot taller than you.
Hey, kids got a chance.
Yep.
But
found you underneath the bridge. It's amazing. It's a great story. It's like kind of Disney-ish.
Everybody feels sorry for somebody.
Sometimes you get lucky enough to marry him.
Yep. But anyway, back to the Garmin. It saved her from going off course because it says you can put the coordinates in there and it'll tell you where to go. So.
I know the new ones do. The new high-end one has applied ballistics and everything in it. I mean, it's
what are you there ain't nothing for? You can,
it's $1,200.
Come on, man.
Just put it in the shooting fund.
Bingo.
Was it your wife just getting ready to buy a whole new house full of furniture?
Do you want to go down that way?
I wouldn't go there.
Slippery slope. Well, man, this was fun. This was a good time.
Yeah.
Appreciate you guys.
We didn't even talk that much shit, really. Could have got way worse, Mullins. It's been a while since we've been on a podcast together.
Yeah, we can always do a part two. We go back and, or we go do the Ironman, half Ironman.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be an official event. We could just fly down.
No.
No, the one I'm talking about is not official.
Perfect.
That's why we should do it in November, after his thing.
It's the weather like November.
That'd be fine.
Down there on the island? It could be windy and cold.
Yeah. I got to be very careful because I plan on doing the reverse training program after the Ironman.
You're reversing out of it?
Yeah.
You're going to intuitively reverse out of it?
Intuitively reverse. So we need to do this earlier in November. Later in November might be bad.
Is that really a thing?
I'm gonna be lazy we're as just, fuck. What you know,
I'm taking it full circle here, back to the beginning of this conversation.
No, I'm taking it back to what you were saying when you were saying intuitively eating. Is that really a thing?
No.
God, I hope not.
No, that's his way of saying he's not doing a goddamn thing.
After the Ironman.
I understand what he was saying. It made me think about what you said earlier about it's the new thing you guys are hearing, intuitively eating.
Oh, no, intuitively eating is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Absolutely,
yeah, but not reverse intuitively training.
No, I know that. I got that part.
I got that. Hey, Instagram following that $19.99 plan. Reverse out of your Ironman, right? Now going back to the social media.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy.
Yep. We can sell it. I promise you. You want to go, if you need vegan water, we have that available too.
Blinker fluid?
Just hit me up. It's keto.
Keto vegan, friendly. Yeah.
Paleo water.
What about air? You got that?
I mean, listen, so we've been working on getting it pure enough, but we're close. We're close to having the air pure.
Is it from the Alps?
Yep.
I don't want it.
It is vegan though.
Paleo certified.
It's all it takes. Eat like a caveman. Magic happens.
That's all I got, guys. I can't do no more. Well, thank you guys, man. This was awesome. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Thanks for inviting me over, Don. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for inviting Don over to my house. Thanks for inviting Don. I'm sorry. Inviting Jeremy over to my house.
Pour him another.
I was looking at Don when I said it. I'm tired of looking at you. This is bad setup.
Pour him another one.
All right, guys. Till next time.
See you guys.